Click kaya959.co.za. This is how
we do it. To download the Point of View podcast.
I mentioned earlier that we have been talking a lot about child poverty, particularly in South Africa. We've been speaking about what's happening in the Eastern Cape, and I think we haven't even delved enough into other parts of the country where we really, really need to talk about child poverty. But so UNICEF has conducted a study and they've released the state of the world's children 2025, and obviously looking into ending poverty for the children of our world today. Now, apart from obviously how insecure children are, food insecure children are, there's also the issue of conflict around the world at the moment, which I think really, really complicates matters. We've asked to join us UNICEF South Africa Social Policy Manager Russell Wildman to help us unpack what it is that they were able to discover in their research. Russell, thank you so much for talking to us, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be with you.
I think we are currently looking at the globe spending around 2.72 trillion in warfare.
Yeah.
How do you fare that and make sense of that against what are we doing and spending on children's welfare?
Yeah. That's a very pertinent question. You know, obviously children are in a unique position in society. They are, like you and I, fully human being, but not yet in a position to articulate their concerns, perhaps in the same way that you and I would do. We're represented, for example, in workplaces through unions. We have full democratic rights within the South African Constitution. We have education behind our back. We tend to be healthy. We are empowered, etc. All these things that we want children to be, but because children are not voting, they not in a position to exercise the kind of influence that you and I exercise, because you and I are taken seriously, because come the local government elections, we're going to go to the booth and we're going to choose who we believe is desirable, is right for the present situation. Many children, or most children, are not in a position to do so, because children by definition are defined as anyone under the age of 18. Mm. So I think there's a constituency issue. There's the fact that children are not fully represented yet within our decision-making structures, whether we're talking about the national legislature, policymaking at local government level, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a neglected constituency, but at the same time, it's a constituency for whom many people in South Africa are fighting for, not just UNICEF. UNICEF would be one of the organizations that actually tries to make a difference. But let's give credit where credit is due. South African civil society organizations, including government, and to some extent, even the private sector, are continuing to make a massive contribution to alleviate child poverty. Thank you.
So what does today's poverty look like, child poverty look like in real terms?
I think if you're talking globally first, the consensus in our report suggests that both income poverty and multidimensional poverty, and by multidimensional poverty, I mean access to critical services, basic education, nutrition, health, and all of these things. We have seen significant declines over a long period. But obviously, COVID-19 has actually come between all of these developments. And COVID-19 has really hampered, I think, some of these initiatives. If I draw this back to South Africa, for example, we were beginning to address hunger very successfully. Mm. If you look at the general household surveys, just prior to COVID-19, there was a declining trend of people being hungry, in particular children being hungry. Unfortunately, COVID-19 intervened. And what COVID-19 actually meant for a lot of children is that folks, parents who were in a position to go and do work were excluded from work, making it difficult to string together sort of different income streams. Because let's be honest, those of us who live on the fringes of society, we can't just rely on one income. You have to have multiple sources of income. And unfortunately, under COVID, that was not possible, and therefore hunger significantly increased, especially for children. However, is again a positive story.
Mm-hmm.
Researchers were telling us during COVID-19 that parents often took the burden of actually going hungry and letting children be fed before they were fed. So that was a level of self-sacrifice. And of course, you and I know that's not sustainable.
Mm.
But it gives you a sense of the nobility that exists within the parent community to make sure that children are actually put first and children are given the necessary resources in order for them to survive. I think it's actually a noble idea, but of course not sustainable.
Of course.
Everyone has to eat.
Russell, there are things that are difficult to manage, but there are certainly things that I think we could do better at. And I'm thinking if we bring it back to South Africa, and we can always expand it.
Yeah.
Systematic issues that are just failures of administrative problems, government processes, where something as simple as managing getting a child documented, for instance, which can go in, you know, it can go such a long way in assisting that child access a grant. And you know, sometimes when a child is able to go to school, they'll be able to get even that lunch or meal at school for, you know, at least once a day. So the many, many ripple effects of denying a child documentation, which we know still happens in this country for children who are South Africans. So I know people always assume this thing about documented people is always about foreigners. No, I'm speaking about children who are South Africans who are not documented.
Absolutely. You know, you've nailed, I think, a key issue for us and a key issue for the South African government. Because as you know, you and I are constantly looking after our identity documents, whether it's the car document or the old book, whatever, even though the old book is being phased out. So you can just imagine it's foundational to everything that we do. We go to the bank, you have to identify yourself at an election poll or polling station. It is absolutely foundational in getting the services that you need. And many South Africans, either due to climate shocks, for example, you had floods in KwaZulu-Natal that basically moved South Africans. People were born in South Africa, South Africans, in essence, and therefore not in a position to access the required documentation. In government favor and in government support, there is a concerted effort, in particular from Home Affairs and from the South African Social Security Agency, SASSA, to make sure that we really get everyone into the net. In fact, UNICEF is now presently going to run a research project with the South African government, SASSA and DSD, where we specifically are asking the question, who are the children in South Africa that should be receiving the child support grant, but are not yet receiving it? And one of the reasons for not receiving it is, of course, documentation.
Mm.
So you absolutely need the nail on, you know, on the spot. We cannot do without documentations. And then sometimes in South Africa, it's complicated because sometimes you have a situation where a child is born, the father is not yet present, and maybe there are naming practices that require the father to be present for the child to be given a name and then for the child to be to be legally registered. And that in some way has to do with, you know, our horrible past, the fact that many of us were displaced, we were forced to work under very different circumstances, removed from families, etc. So all of those effects are still playing out in modern South Africa, democratic South Africa. But you're absolutely right.
And I mean, Russell, for some, you know, it's very difficult for us to imagine a place where someone does not have access to a healthcare center. I have been to parts of this country where getting close to even a road takes you hours.
Absolutely.
And so there are just no healthcare centers or a clinic, and children get born out there, and God forbid a child gets born at home.
Correct.
It's another story.
Correct. Absolutely. Once again, a key component that you are touching on is quality public services, or the access to quality public services. And what you are talking to is not even quality services, but access to quality public services. Yes, absolutely. And that's still a big concern. Now, our concern is UNICEF. Is that government services had been cut for the last decade or more. And it had to do with the fact that we're repaying debt is expensive, It takes money away from education and social development and clinics and all of these things, et cetera, et cetera. But our plea has always been consistent. If you're going to cut, the last place where you need to cut would be children's budgets, would be things that children care about, schools, quality nutrition. As you pointed out, the example of the school nutrition, a lot of children go to school with the expectation that I will be fed. And as a result, once you're fed, you're able to concentrate, and therefore leading to better schooling outcomes, et cetera, et cetera. We should not, and I praise you for your insistence on the necessity for, first of all, having access to public services. They must be in place. We are paying taxes, indirect taxes via the value added tax, direct taxes via our incomes or whatever. But the point is, these services must be there. And if they are there, they must be quality services. There's no use to have a public health care center and you've got medicine stockouts, or you don't have enough medical professionals to actually assist the community. So that is the kind of understanding that we admire among South Africans. This awareness that if we don't deal with the children's issue, South Africa's future looks really bleak.
So let's talk about the uncomfortable conversation where people are becoming more nationalists around the world, not just in South Africa, and they are protective of their own resources. And again, we then find ourselves with children who, by no fault of their own, are in the middle of the tensions between their parents, who may be refugees, illegal or legal, and they themselves find themselves in these very precarious situations where they're in no man's land, they're not getting any services from anybody, and they don't have an identity. And society is fighting amongst themselves and, of course, leaving the children behind.
Oh, absolutely. That's a very complicated question. But I think what we can do is to go back to a constitutional court case that was brought by the Department of Social Development to the constitutional court, and asking in essence, and saying in essence, look, we don't have money to cover everybody else. Now, what the constitutional court basically said, I have sympathies with you, Department of Social Development, but you must understand that if some parts of government are not functioning, in other words, if you don't do proper border control, if you don't do the necessary things to make sure that people come into the country legally, you must understand that once a child lands in the Republic of South Africa, you have responsibility for that child. So although you did not cause the problem, Department of Social Development, by the Constitution, you are obligated to respond to that problem in a humane, in a dignified, and with human rights, of course, being key. This is not to say that South Africa is in a position to accommodate the entire world. We are not in a position to do so. And I think it's important to say that. But then you've got to put government systems into place to make sure that we deal with anyone who comes into the country legally, like any other country, and not discriminate on the basis of anything, whether you're from Southern Africa, Eastern Africa, or West Africa. South Africa is a leader in human rights, and South Africa is often credited as being a net donor to the rest of the continent. That is a prestige and a status that we should never abandon. But at the same time, the insistence on lawfulness, on making sure that if you do come to South Africa and you apply for asylum, you should be given a right to apply for asylum. But South Africa does operate with a set of laws. But as the Constitutional Court affirmed unambiguously, if a child ends up in South Africa, whether their child had come here legally or illegally, you, as the South African government, has a constitutional and a human rights obligation to make sure that particular child does not go under. And I think that adds to the quality of South African life, although some will argue that resources are taken away. Resources is also how we are perceived by the external world, how we are perceived by our African peers. And we are not excusing any other country for not taking their responsibility seriously, because each country has signed to the, all these different declarations, protecting children, protecting adults, protecting women, for example. So nobody should ever give up their responsibility or outsource their responsibility to the South African government. But we also have very high standards in terms of how we treat people, how we deal with human rights issues. And this is one of the surpluses and credits that should go to South Africa. And that's why South Africa was able to proudly host the G20. It's a country where human rights are held in complete high esteem, and long may that continue. And especially if children land up in South Africa, as I said, doesn't really matter the route, that responsibility falls upon the parent, but you cannot punish a child for decisions taken by parents to bring their children into South Africa. You've got to take responsibility for making sure that you look after them. But at the same time, have these broader international conversations, explaining to everyone that this is a friendly country, this is an open country, but it's also a country that have limited resources.
Russell, I'm not sure you were able to look into this as UNICEF, but you mm-hmm. understand the phenomena. Is there in societies, and maybe we can bring back to South Africa again, but I mm-hmm. think it's similar to others, where there is a consciousness about mm-hmm. the plight of children and the vulnerabilities of children. You spoke earlier about how vulnerable yeah. children are, in mm-hmm. that even as you are corrupt, you at least bear in mind the consequences of your corruption. And you've seen it before, where you have corruption on school feeding programs, for instance, where they siphon out money yeah. From these school feeding programs, where children will go without food, where somebody, you know, duplicates hundreds of people's, you know, birth certificates, denying mm-hmm. others access to that grant that we spoke of. I'm just wondering mm-hmm. whether, is there a sense that societies are conscious of protecting their children in all these ways possible?
I think in South Africa, across different communities, I think there is a fair sense that we need to protect children. You've got severe instances of corruption, and which will, of course, damage, you know, the livelihoods for children, the sort of school nutrition programs that you're talking about. But I think, generally speaking, if you look at, for example, different religious communities in South Africa making an active contribution to protect children, you will see the outrage when children are being hurt or being mutilated or being murdered or being sexually assaulted. There is a consensus in South Africa that you need to protect children. I think your question points to a broader issue.
Mm.
It is government, it's the private sector, it's civil society, it's all of us are basically involved in making sure that children are fine.
Mm.
You go back to the old African proverb that if a child lives in a community, that child does not live in a lawless society. There are norms, there are standards. Unfortunately, among us, you'll always find exceptions. You'll always find human beings that deviate from what you and I would consider to be normal or decent.
Mm.
And under those circumstances, the South African police services, the justice system, your social workers, the rehabilitation sector, we must all do what's necessary to protect children. I think in the end, we would like to live in a society where it's better to prevent, where it's better to educate than to respond. Because to respond, you respond to a broken body, you respond to a broken soul. And it's not just a broken body, a broken soul, but it's a family that's broken, basically.
Mm.
Because it's like burglary. Somebody comes into your house, takes what does not belong to that person, and harms the individuals who are in that household. The amount of psychological damage that our children have to deal with and their caregivers have to deal with is just extraordinary. And I think, like poverty, like child poverty, the protection of children needs to become a national priority.
Mm. Mm.
It shouldn't be something that is only spoken, you know, at conferences or you just have political pronouncements. Because if you're going to kill or maim or disable the very source, the very seed of your future, then I just cannot see what society we will be inheriting.
Absolutely.
You and I will be old and we expect their children to basically take over, lead us, protect us, and protect their futures. But what's presently happening is completely unacceptable. It has to become a national priority. It has to become, like child poverty, something that we must actually fight a war and fight a war successfully, because it is heartbreaking if I think about my own upbringing and how I was protected by older siblings, how I was protected by my mom, how I was protected by my dad. And then you hear these horrible stories where sometimes within families, people are violated. Within families, the trust is actually lost. And that breaks down society. That breaks the bond. That breaks the sort of intimacy that you need in order to bring children to adulthood, so they can be the next leaders and the next leaders of society. Yeah, it's such a sad story.
Yeah, I mean, when you speak of, you know, the rapes that we are seeing and the number of times we hear about children really being hurt in that way, I think we do have to have a deeper conversation. And yet with all of this, you say that there is hope. Russell, let's talk about what hope you see.
Yeah. Look, I mean, across... No. I hear you, because sometimes I think pessimism just befalls all of us. And if, God forbid, somebody falls into that situation, you know, the whole family, the whole community is affected, as you would see on TV multiple times over and over again. The trauma is repeating itself. But if you look at what the South African government is doing, it spends a significant proportion of the national and provincial budgets on children. There you cannot fault the South African government. Where we can begin to ask questions is about the quality of these services. Like, for example, you've mentioned the school nutrition. If you're going to do the school nutrition, put good quality food on the table, make sure children are fed every single day without exception, and if there's any irregularities, report it immediately and have it done. So first of all, government is really putting in in a lot of resources. We need to reverse the cuts that took place over the last decade or so. The cuts are devastating. You can only cut public expenditures and public services if the parent community is in a position to make up for the shortfall. I often worked across the continent, and Mauritius was a classic example where government consistently cut basic education, but it was under the proviso that the parent community was able
was getting
to
better.
Exactly. In the South African context, it's not true. Even the middle class is under pressure.
Yes.
And therefore, quality public services must be protected.
So, is there enough will for us to pause and think and do what is required?
It's probably the hardest question to answer, but I will say this. South Africa needs to come together and decide what are the most important priorities. Now, of course, we have ongoing at this point in time a national dialogue. But that national dialogue must be as broad and as representative and as democratic as possible. Because as a country, you can't do everything. But you can decide the protection of women, the protection of children are some of the two most important priorities that we all agree on. And then you dedicate resources from the government side, from the private sector side, from the civil society side, to make sure that these two priorities are protected. Why women? Women are often the caregivers for children. You know, I was fortunate enough, I traveled to Belgium a couple of years ago. And it was in their summer, so I couldn't sleep because, you know, light goes on until after 11 o'clock. I opened the curtains and I saw two young women drawing money from an ATM at just after 11 without a care in the world. Now, if our women can do so, if our women are not hampered from actually going into the workplace and being successful, and if our women are not given artificial ceilings, then half of the workforce comes together with the other half of the workforce, and South Africa becomes a better country. It is such a fundamental priority. Women are overly concerned about their children, which is a normal thing, But we need to create the circumstances in which women can make decisions to go to work, knowing that there's ECD, knowing that there's shelters, knowing that there's facilities where children can actually be looked after. And so for me and for UNICEF, I think for us, the priority around the protection of women and children is not sentimental, but it's got enormous economic consequences. If you get it right, and women are free to move wherever they want to move, and make the gains that we would expect them to make in a society, South Africa will be such a better place, honestly. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that as South Africans, we need to find the political mechanisms to come together with our political leaders, with our religious leaders, with our civil society leaders, with our business leaders, with our union leaders, and decide what is the fundamental vision for this place. And I believe South Africa has it within itself.
Yeah.
To actually get to that point. Because then you don't have to say we have 50 priorities. Mm, mm. 50 priorities are not sustainable. It's not feasible. You have to say South Africa for the next 20 years will focus on these five different issues. It's not to say all other issues fall off the table, but they will be less important as we push towards a society that is decent, driven by human rights, child-centric, family-centric, et cetera, and protecting women to reach their potential. When you have a society such as that, the whole place is transformed. And so hopefully the national dialogue will get us to that point where we agree what are the key things that we ought to be doing. But as a starter, the protection of women and children and the advancement of women's rights and children's rights are non-negotiable issues, basically. Over.
And I think that's the nub of the issue for me. You know, there is the national dialogue. There are all these initiatives. There's a report like this. I mean, it's not the first time you release a report like this. And again, I want to come back to South Africa because there are many other ways in which we can deal with other countries. But the question is then that I know that we say that we care and I know we say the right things. But when you release a report like this, does it shift the needle? Do the people that need to see this and act appropriately?
I think there's multiple responsibilities here. And to answer your question directly, often we generate research, but we don't follow up upon it, to be quite frank with you. But I think it's our responsibility, and in particular the responsibility of the head of our institution, with us as professionals, to work with the South African government, work with the private sector, work with different stakeholders to make this actually come true. But what I can say about South Africa, we've got policies in place.
Exactly.
We just have to make sure these policies are implemented. Make sure that every child that deserves to receive a child support grant actually gets a child support grant.
Yeah.
Make sure that that primary health facility that is saving lives, actually, and as our research basically shows, the vast majority of South Africans prefer to go to primary health clinics because the expectation is that you're going to get a good quality service. Mm. If all of these things start working as they should be working, if government can also find it within its heart to actually stop the cutting of services that are critical for children and women, we will make a significant dent in child poverty in this country. We've actually done it prior to COVID-19.
Yeah.
We've actually moved the needle. Remember between 2006 and 2011, we actually kind of got poverty down because the economy was actually growing. Then came the global financial crisis. Then between 2011 and 2015, we actually saw a significant uptick in poverty. And of course, as you will know, we are waiting for Stats South Africa to release its findings from the income and expenditure survey on what the latest poverty rates in South Africa are, in particular, what the latest child poverty rates in South Africa are. Those things should come out in December. I'm hoping, and everybody's probably hoping, that we would like to see a decrease in poverty.
Don't know.
But, you know, until such time that the results are released, I wouldn't know what those results actually are, but I'm hoping for the best.
Yeah. It's been wonderful talking to you, and hope, yeah, we will talk again and expand a bit more on other things, but really appreciate your time there. Russell Wilderman is the UNICEF South Africa Social Policy Manager. They've released the State of the World's Children 2025 report. And of course, the agenda here is ending child poverty, hopefully for all children of the world. So if you are able to, please go to the UNICEF platform and see if you can't find yourself a copy and see the full report there.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.